Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I'm here with Peter Meyerson from the law firm of Cohn, Resnick, Meyerson, and Plowd, who's my co-host today. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be here as always.
Thank you very much. Our next guest is not a guest. He's our new reporter. It's Robert Treston. The segment is going to be called Breaking Barriers. It's about special leaders and what they do. And Robert, or Bob, if I'm allowed to call you that, is the director for the Anti-Defamation League. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here today.
Good. Well, I've spent my career trying to help leaders to break barriers, to put themselves up at a special level, because special leaders create special organizations. And I'm glad that we're going to be talking about that every month with you.
Well, leaders have the ability to make a real difference.
Right.
And make a difference for communities and the people around them. So those qualities are critical, and it's what moves the country forward.
Right. So, you know, you've been pretty active lately. I mean, there's always a lot of data for you going on in America. So what's going on in your world? Where are you seeing leaders, or lack of leadership, or great leaders?
Well, you know, there's different kinds of leaders, Jeff. There are the ones who are at the, you know, holding the flag with a lot of other people following them. But last week, we convened 1,400 student leaders in Boston from over 60 schools in Massachusetts and Vermont.
Wow.
And we have anti-bias education programs in around 65 schools across New England. And once a year, we bring 1,400 students together so that they can spend a day together to work on issues around bullying, issues around cyberbullying, how you know kids are targeting one another. And so we brought in a special leader for these student leaders to meet. It was Willie O'Ree. And Willie, for those who don't know, was the first black hockey player. He played for the Boston Bruins in 1958. And actually, he played against the Bruins' rival, the Montreal Canadiens.
Right.
And he broke the color barrier.
In hockey. Right.
So a lot of people refer to Willie as the Jackie Robinson of hockey. And he was our keynote speaker to really give these student leaders some real inspiration.
Was Willie an American or a Canadian? Because I would want to sort of get that. Do you know?
Willie is Canadian, and that's an important point, Jeff, because Willie always refers to himself as the first black hockey player, not the first African-American hockey player.
Right.
And he lives in San Diego, but he's still Canadian.
Well, because, you know, Canada has a different history, clearly a different history, and a different philosophy about blacks, if we'll use that term since you did it, because, you know, Canada was the destination for the Underground Railroad. And so there's integration of blacks into the community is different in Canada than it has been in the United States. So coming to play here, he was going against white French Canadians playing hockey, white Canadians, but going to American cities that weren't necessarily receptive to blacks. Is that correct?
No, that's right. And in fact, Willie's grandparents were slaves who got into Canada through the Underground Railroad. So he has that connection. And one of the things that he talked to the students about was what it was like going from Canada and then living in the United States, playing in the United States. And he made two important points. One was that as a player, as a professional hockey player who was on the ice, you know, he was the target of all sorts of racial slurs and taunts, you know, and people... people being aggressive with him on the ice.
And players?
Fans and opposing players. Some opposing players, but he made it clear never his teammates. And the other thing is, before Willie became a professional hockey player, he was actually recruited to be a pro baseball player. And he went down to Atlanta, and he tried out for, I believe it was the Milwaukee Braves, and he went down to a training camp, and he told them what it was like to go from living in the Maritimes of Canada, where he's from the Maritimes,
right,
down to Atlanta, and then to be, you know, in a segregated dorm with only black players, and you know, it was tough. And the, you know, today's students, if you think about the students that are in middle and high school today, they don't have access other than a book to people who have experienced this first person in their lifetime. I mean, Willie is almost 80 years old. So it was a really important experience for them to actually hear live from a person who's experienced this.
And, you know, just through my experience at the JNF, I find when I meet young people, they don't want to live in the old attitude. They don't want to think about the past. They want to think much more future-oriented. They don't want to hear about the Holocaust. They don't want to hear about slave trades. They don't want that in their mindset. How do you think the kids reacted to him?
Well, judging by the long lines of people who wanted pictures and wow. autographs, I think, you know, and I will tell you, when we invited Willie, I wasn't really sure because he's several generations away from, you know, 14 and 15-year-olds.
Hey, you said he's in his 80s. So.
But I think his personal experience, and the other thing is Willie's blind in one eye. So a lot of people didn't know that he was injured before he actually got into the NHL, and he played a 20-year career, two in the NHL, the rest
blind
of the minors,
in one eye.
Blind
yeah.
in one eye.
I knew about that. I forgot, but I knew.
So the message for these kids is, look, it may be a different era, but you're still facing challenges. And if you set your mind to it, if you have determination, if you dig in and pull out those leadership skills, you can do anything you want. And that's really the message that we sent to these kids. We wanted them to leave that room thinking that they're here because we believe in them. We believe in their...
Well, it's about them. It's not about Willie.
Yes. It's about for the Anti-Defamation League, it's about our belief in their ability to change the world. And we want them to have the confidence and all of the skills to go out there and do it. Because each one of them has that leadership ability to go
right.
and do it. You don't, you know, the leaders of the world are not just the Willie O'Rees. We want to make sure that the students that are going through middle and high school and graduating and going on also can be leaders.
How you know, the story of Willie is a fascinating one, but how did you select the student leaders? I mean, that's what...
Or did they self-volunteer?
Or did they volunteer? I mean...
So the way our program works, in each of the schools, we have a peer training model, which is really the magic of ADL's anti-bias education. So after they heard from Willie, they all broke out into workshops. So 1,400 kids, after they heard this great speech from Willie O'Ree, were in 37 different breakout rooms at the Sheraton Hotel in Boston. And in each of those workshops was a program that was led by two other middle and high school students. No adults were running these workshops. So we train teams of kids in schools throughout the year. And we bring in those peer leaders from their schools. And they also bring in some of the students from them, from their schools. So a lot of the faculty in the individual schools help select the kids. And also the leaders, the peer leaders who are, you know, middle and high school kids who are actually running these programs in the schools, they help bring in these kids. And you end up with, you know, schools bringing anywhere from 7 to, you know, 20 kids. And that has the ability for them to then go back into their school, and then they start leading other kids.
It's interesting. So at the school level, they're sort of selected by their peers as to who might be leaders. And then when they get to your program, the people who are already leaders sort of enhance that process.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, a lot of the people, you know, we try and choose the strongest, you know, speakers and, you know, the strongest students are going to be the ones who are going to lead a workshop with 30 or 40 other students. But some of the people that are sitting in that room next year, they're likely to be the ones who are going to be sitting at the front of the room, standing up at the front of the room, and leading one of these workshops. And it really does have the ability, if you work at it throughout the year, and if a school makes a commitment to do this year after year, you have the ability to change the culture in that school. You can't change culture and build leaders on a one-shot deal. You can't do it with one school assembly.
You can't teach anything in life on a one-shot deal.
Well, everything is...
Learning is a continuous process.
Everything's incremental. I mean...
But, you know, when I went to school in Montreal. I was born...
And he played hockey, too.
Well, I did. Badly. When I went to school, and I'm not... This isn't about me. It's just trying to understand what you're saying. The schools in Montreal were run by the church. It was either a Catholic school or a Protestant school. They were school boards versus churches. But they had made a conscious effort at the end of the Second World War to teach social values in the schools. And it was clearly part of the educational curriculum, if not a course. It wasn't a course. And it was clear to me what my responsibility was to society based upon going to school. But nowadays, I don't see kids getting that same kind of social education that you're giving. It's coming more from places like you.
You know, the schools are under a lot of pressure to cram a lot of subjects and content, and there's a price to pay for that. You know, even if you take the issue of bullying, for instance, you know, it doesn't work when a school basically says, okay, these are the five rules, and if you break them, you're gonna be disciplined. You actually need to teach kids about what's behind those rules, and whether that's about cyberbullying, whether that's about using, you know, racial or graphic language that may offend someone, you need to teach kids about what are the repercussions.
Right.
How does that impact another person? And kids want to learn. And you know what? If they actually have an understanding and you teach them instead of, you know, giving them a rule book, if you teach them what's behind it, it will have an impact. It will change their behavior.
Well, I think you're right, and it's I almost feel surreal for me. You know, when I was a kid, everybody joined the Boy Scouts, so I joined the Boy Scouts, and I got my badges, and my badges were not just.
Were you a cub?
Yeah, I was a cub, but learning to be a cub, I had to understand what it meant to win these badges.
What do you mean, Cub Scout or Boy Scout?
Well, cubs. First you're a cub, first. And then you're a Boy Scout.
Right,
because
right.
I was a cub, too.
I was, yeah, I
well,
think
no,
we talked
I was
about
a Boy
that.
Scout, though. I mean, I was
yeah,
a cub
Boy
Scout.
Yeah, but Boy Scouts start older, I think.
Yeah, that's older. But as a cub, I had to, you know, get certain levels. Right. I had to learn certain, pass certain what I would consult, social criteria to get those badges, to understand what it meant to be giving and good and doing.
And you felt really proud when you had those badges on your arm, didn't you?
I did. And, you know, I see myself doing things today. As an adult, when I see people on the street who can't cross a street or having trouble getting out of a car, and I jump and now, so many decades later, I say to myself, "Oh, that's my Boy Scout training." It's so ingrained about my responsibility to people. It's just being a Boy Scout, whatever it was. But that was the training I got at that time. It wasn't just that my mother told me you have to do that; it's that they told me why it was important. And taught it to me.
Well, that's why, you know, the education components to this work, to anti-bias work, to actually teaching kids about having a good moral compass, it is just as important, if not more, than, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, because it makes people better citizens, better leaders.
So the ADL, if what I'm saying is correct, is more important today than it was 40, 50 years ago, because we have less of this stuff going being sponsored by schools and the traditional institutions that say Peter and I and you grew up with doing it. So the ADL becomes that much more important than it ever has been before. If somebody wants to know more about the ADL and cares about these things, how would they find you?
NewEngland.ADL.org is our Boston website. All of the programs are noted on there. And, you know, if you have kids in a school or you want us to reach out to a particular school, all you have to do is just email us and just go to our website, because we are adding schools every year. We run a training institute for teachers in Montpelier, Vermont. It's in July. And so the new schools that are going to be signing up and starting our program this fall, we'll be convening some teachers and faculty from those schools in Montpelier in July. So
oh,
they're prepared.
Nice. Bravo. And we're very excited to have you as part of the Radio Entrepreneurship team. I look forward to speaking to you throughout the year and you becoming making all of us more socially aware of our responsibilities and really breaking barriers for all of us. Thanks for being on the show today. And again, my co-host today, Peter Myerson. I look forward to seeing you again, Bob.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is
thanks,
a great,
Peter.
Great. It was a great interview.
Great. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.